Mr. Chairman, Friday the 5th of April 2019, during first and second reading. A bill for an act to amend the European Parliamentary Elections Act 2004, the Honourable the Deputy Chieftain. I confirm that I have received indication, certification in fact, as regards the urgency of this bill. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have the honour to move that a bill for an act to amend the European Parliamentary Elections Act 2004 be read a first time. And I'll put a question. Would you? And I'll put a question, which is that a bill for an act to amend the European Parliamentary Elections Act 2004 is a first time. Those in favour? Those against? Carried. The European Parliamentary Elections Amendment Act 2019. I have the honour to move that the bill be now read a second time. Mr. Speaker, elections to the European Parliament are due to take place across the EU on Thursday, the 23rd of May, or Sunday, the 26th of May. The United Kingdom and Gibraltar are due to have left the European Union on the 29th of March. This was the anniversary date of the United Kingdom's formal notification of its intention to exit the EU. This departure date also avoided the need to take part in the European elections. The House is aware of the uncertainty that we face as regards to the actual date when the UK and Gibraltar elected the European Union. That departure date was extended into next Friday, the 12th of April, in the face of a no-deal Brexit. It is extended to the 27th of May in the event of the approval of the withdrawal agreement by the United Kingdom Parliament. The UK Parliament, as we know, has to vote not approve the withdrawal agreement. The President of the European Council has today said that he will recommend to EU leaders an extension until the 31st of March 2020. This proposal would also allow for the possibility that the UK leave before that date. Honourable members would have heard that the Prime Minister has now sought a second extension until the 30th of June 2019. Again, with the possibility that the UK may leave earlier if the withdrawal agreement is approved. We have pledged to commence preparations for holding European elections and to cancel those preparations if the UK were to leave before polling day. Mr. Speaker, against this shifting background, the government has issued instructions that we will be prepared to participate in European elections as well. The clerk in his capacity as reforming officer has already had dispute contact with his counterpart in the United Kingdom. The Parliamentary Council, Paul Peralta, has had contact with the Cabinet Office. The John Matter is now on standby. The bill before the House today is part of that process. It is a part of our contingency planning in order to prepare for the possible European election in Gibraltar. The Chief Minister has certified the bill as urgent, so the House can take it today at short notice. Given the circumstances, honourable members will, I am sure, understand why this is necessary. Mr. Speaker, I am very grateful to the Honourable Mr. Phillips, the Leader of the Opposition, who confirmed to me yesterday on behalf of members of the Opposition and no issue with the bill. Paragraph 9 of Schedule 1 to the European Parliamentary Elections Act of 2004 requires us to conduct a canvass based on a vote to be appointed by the Chief Minister. The purpose of the canvass is to produce a register for European elections. This canvass is normally conducted in October of the year preceding the European election. Clearly, where we are, it is impossible to comply with such a requirement. Therefore, we need to adopt Schedule 1 of the Act for this and any other connected purpose. The speaker, canvass is already underway for the purpose of preparing a register of electors for the next general election in Gibraltar. It makes sense to rely on that canvas, and for that canvas to form the basis of a register for the European Parliamentary elections as well. However, there are differences between the two. The European Register will include international residents and voters, as well as qualifying Commonwealth citizens. This is also true of the UK Register. These categories of voters would now need to be included in our new voter register as well. By coincidence, a significant number of EU and Commonwealth citizens responded to the existing canvas despite not being entitled to registration for the voter election. These applications will, however, be deemed to have been properly made for the purposes of European elections. This principle has already been agreed to the Council by the Cabinet Office in London. Mr. Speaker, while the European Register will be substantially complete, the government wants to make it clear that there will be an opportunity for any unregistered, entitled person to include their name in it. However, relying on the devoted general election canvas requires an amendment to paragraph 9 of Section 1 to the Act. Other amendments to the Senate are also necessary to prepare for participating in European parliamentary elections at very short notice. In fact, draft regulations amending Section 1 to the Act are being discussed at a technical level with the UK government for the moment. The intention is that they will be finalised and published on Monday, when this bill is due to become an act with the approval of the House. Regulations make the following three amendments to Schedule 1. The first is to deem the application received for the purposes of the general election as satisfying the requirement to conduct a canvass for European elections under paragraph 9.1 of Schedule 1. The second is deeming the 31st of March 2019 as a canvass date for the purposes of two cross-references in the schedule. This referendum needs to come before the publication of the revised register. Thirdly, everyone registered in accordance with the new provisions will be deemed to have opted out of the edited register, so that in paragraph 45 of Schedule 1. This is because applicants did not have had an opportunity to opt out of this register. The reason is that the form to be registered in the devoted general election register is different to the form used for the European parliamentary election. The former does not give you a choice to opt out. Mr. Speaker, you have to recall that this is also reflected for the referendum of 2016, where again we also relied on the general election calendar. This will therefore allow us to amend that schedule by regulation in order to be able to react in a quick and timely manner to an amendment that may reasonably be required. Mr. Speaker, this mechanism will allow the voter to participate in elections to the European Parliament for what could be the last time. The duration of participating in these elections, just weeks or maybe months before we leave the European Union, is bewildering in itself. But this is where we are. Mr. Speaker, this is not where any of us thought we were going to be. Lack of clarity, uncertainty, and confusion have sadly become the norm since the UK voted to leave the European Union in June of 2016. External outcomes and unpredictable situations have become the order of the day. Therefore, the bill before this House today is precisely to provide for one of those many twists and turns that the Brexit process has thrown up. Mr. Speaker, I commend the bill to the House.
Before I put the question, does any honourable member wish to speak on the general principles and merits of this bill? The Honourable Daniel Peter.
Mr. Speaker, it is symptomatic of the chaos that Brexit has become that 2 years on from the referendum, at the point at which we were indeed, beyond the point at which we were to leave the European Union, we're now bringing a bill to Parliament in order to prepare for a potential election to the European Parliament. For our part, Mr. Speaker, as an opposition, we hope that this is a sign of things to come, and that in fact we will not be leaving the European Union after all. And I say that in jest, Mr. Speaker, but in fact, observing what is going on in the United Kingdom Parliament on almost a daily basis, what appeared to be an impossibility a number of months ago, actually doesn't look like an impossibility today, and some would say, in fact, a distinct possibility but we will see what transpires. Mr. Speaker, although it is not the practice of Parliament, and certainly it's not the practice of an opposition, to allow a government to amend timely legislation by way of regulation, we understand entirely that this is what the purpose of this bill is, and the government has the support of the
opposition. Honourable Member, is this the Undersecretary of Agreement as well? I'm calling the Member for the Honourable Chief Minister.
Mr. Speaker, the government is very keen to find itself in the difficult situation of having to bring a bill to ensure that European parliamentary elections can be held in Gibraltar at least once again. I know that perhaps the returning officer in Clark in his heart may be pleased, but in his mind may be concerned about all the work which will now have to be done in Gibraltar, but will in the United Kingdom in this short period of time. The Electoral Commission in the United Kingdom has today issued guidance in respect of European parliamentary elections to be held on the 23rd of May 2019. Again, something we will all be very pleased to see here, but others outside of this place in the United Kingdom and some in Gibraltar will be pleased to see. Ironically, because the Electoral Commission's guidance says, but as a result of a bank holiday in Gibraltar on the 29th of April and on the 1st of May 2019, some electoral deadlines in the South West electoral region are different to the deadlines elsewhere in Great Britain. Mr. Speaker, I think it's worth pointing out that this official guidance of the Electoral Commission in the United Kingdom in respect of European parliamentary elections arises as a result of the election of my government. For simple reason. The 29th of April is Workers' Memorial Day, a day that we declared a bank holiday when we were elected in order to ensure that we remember all those who lost their lives or were injured at work. On the 1st of May, Mr. Speaker, is a bank holiday in Gibraltar on the 1st of May every year, and it will be whilst there is a socialist government in Gibraltar, although it is not in the United Kingdom and has not been under all other governments in Gibraltar. So, Gibraltarian socialism and liberalism is having a similar and important effect even on the date on which this European election is, we all hope, going to be held and the different deadlines are going to be complied with. That's almost a by-the-by, but politically important senior status. What is more important than that, Mr. Speaker, is that the Electoral Commission of the United Kingdom is issuing guidelines which refer to the elections in Gibraltar. But the Deputy Chief Minister of Gibraltar is seeking the support of the Parliament to pass legislation to enable us to form part of those European elections. Of course, similarly important is that those elections continue because we will then vote through the European Parliament representative of the people of Gibraltar. That is the result of Matthews in the United Kingdom, a case brought in the name of James Matthews, where the now Attorney General of Gibraltar, with the support, amongst others, of Raphael Benfica, were able to persuade, a point I've made repeatedly, a point I have made repeatedly in this house, Mr. Speaker, even when only others claimed him as a friend. And if the other gentleman says to look back at the Hampstead, he will see that is the case. But there's a very important point here, Mr. Speaker. We must not enliven it with levity. It is this. That all of us in this house, we want to send a message to Madrid and to the fools in Brussels who felt that they were right to include a footnote that referred to Gibraltar as a colony in a measure
formally I would regard those as unparliamentary. On this occasion, I am even prepared to endorse it.
Mr. Speaker, I'm delighted to support your rule.
the ruling we're using to be about is referring to a member of this parliament in that way, which I'm not, Mr. Speaker, on this occasion. But, Mr. Speaker, the European Parliament in particular, which is a parliament that is known as a legislature now in international law, thanks to the funding of the European Court of Human Rights in the national case. In other words, the European Parliament is recognized as a full-blown legislature as a result of the action of a Gibraltarian, should not for one moment have allowed itself to have been persuaded by the national interest of only one member state to have permitted the inclusion of a reference to Gibraltar as a colony when the Gibraltarians have voted for that European Parliament. They may not vote for the next one, but we voted for that European Parliament. If anybody in the Parliament has paused to think, other than those who rightly took the side of the people of Gibraltar, not all of them British, they would have realized that by any definition of this colonialism, colonials do not vote for the Parliament that defines them as colonials. You cannot be a colonial in respect of a parliament which you elect by way of universal franchise and where your vote counts as much as everybody else's. You can only be a colonial if there is a parliament that determines things for you and you don't vote for it. And so, in particular, in the context of European parliamentary elections, to the European Parliament, elected in particular by the people of Gibraltar, by direct universal suffrage of all the peoples of the European Union, it is absolutely ridiculous for anybody who has thought that it made any meaningful sense for that parliament to agree to the inclusion of the reference to Gibraltar as a colony. Different things might have been relevant before that, when the territory of Gibraltar suspended the right to vote because of the wrong decisions made in the United Kingdom as to the extent of the franchise, which is the right reason for having challenged that decision as to what the franchise should be. And so, Mr. Speaker, I am, as a result of the convention this week, doubly pleased that we are going to continue the legislation at least to be able to vote in European parliamentary elections to that parliament. And I sincerely hope, despite the work that it will entail for honourable members officials of this House, that we do get the opportunity to vote for that European Parliament. Because indeed, in that way also, that measure, which includes the reference that the European Parliament has allowed, would be not just irrelevant because of its erroneous reference to Gibraltar as a colony, and therefore to the people of Gibraltar as colonial, but because it would never have come into effect. Because it's really a measure that comes into effect as a no-deal measure. And so all the claim that we hear beyond this place should be put in its proper place, especially if there is a deal, or indeed, hopefully, even no deal. Although I do know, Mr. Speaker, that would disappoint some members of the Honourable Member Division Executive who have been calling in public for hard justice. And Mr. Speaker, I therefore sincerely hope that all of the hard work that we have done in the past couple of years on Brexit will be a wasted time, Mr. Speaker, and that we can forget about leaving the European Union, we can continue about voting for the European Parliament and European parliamentary elections, and in that way continue to enjoy the benefits of the final end of Matthew. So the Honourable Gentleman opposite in giving his support to the bill has said something which is important and which I agree, which is that we are seeing a great measure of political chaos in the United Kingdom. And in endorsing some of the work that he has done in the past month in which he and I have had occasion to agree publicly and privately, I would say that I do certainly hope that these European elections are held, that the effort is worth it, and that that should be only the first people's vote and the first opportunity for people to vote in a way that demonstrates the view, I think now, of the majority of the British people that the European project is a good one, not a bad one. Because these European elections, if they are held, can be a referendum on Europe. They can be an opportunity for those of us who believe in the importance of Britain's continued participation in the European project. It can be that opportunity to put that in the context of the vote that are come. And I sincerely believe that this is a great chance that we are being presented with. Mr. Speaker, honourable members have heard the Deputy Minister relate to us the letter that the Prime Minister sent to the President of the European Council, Donald Tusk. I will tell members of the House today that Donald Tusk said something which I thought was very opposite last week, when he said that the European Union did not forget and would not turn its back on the 6 million people who have signed the petition to revoke the Article 50 notification, or indeed the million plus, one stage of the authorities in the afternoon thought it might have been up to 2 million, who demonstrated in favour of a second referendum. I know that included the honourable and honourable member opposite, and included members of the executive committee of my party and other Gibraltarians also who were counted in that number. As a result, Mr. Speaker, I have written to the President of the European Council and told him that the people of Gibraltar took heart from those words, but that it does not help that in the context of the negotiations, the President of the European Council and others have at different times said that on the issue of Gibraltar post-Brexit, they take the side of Spain, because we continue to be the region that most supported with remaining in the European Union. I think it's important that I should make that point. I have one or two more points to make, but the other Germans asked me to give way in our room.
And Mr. Speaker, we said in the clarity of the confirmation of the people's vote. And I just wanted to ask the Chief Minister to perhaps elaborate or comment on this. I mean, we've seen in recent months, in fact, the question of the people's vote has gathered momentum over the last 6, 7, 8 months. And we've seen in the last few weeks Nicola Sturgeon, the First Minister of Scotland, point out quite rightly that the Scottish people voted to remain, and that in fact there is a distinction between a vote which went against remain at the referendum, which was a vote to leave the European Union in principle. People were asked, well, do you want to leave the European Union? Yes, you want to leave the European Union. But there's a distinction between that and the actual terms on which you leave the European Union. Because, of course, some of the people, if you ask some of the people that voted to leave, are you willing to leave under any conditions and any terms? Those people will say, well, I'm prepared to leave, but not under a bad deal or not under any terms. Therefore, there is a fundamental distinction between the decision to leave and the terms upon which you leave. And those terms ought to be put to the people in a confirmation referendum. And after the revocation of Article 50, which of course, I mean, everybody would prefer, but it doesn't seem that it is likely, that the position of the Gibraltar government is going to be to urge Theresa May, and whether if somebody takes over from Theresa May, in any event, a British government to put any terms that ultimately might be agreed to the people in a confirmatory referendum, which, in our view, certainly the view of the opposition, is reflective of the will of the people in Gibraltar.
I don't know about the view of the opposition, it must be the view of the elected opposition, because I'm just reading something from one of the executive members, who is indeed an office holder of their executive, who is saying that he hopes that there is no extension granted in the it's only long enough to remove Theresa May from the leadership of the Conservative Party. But assuming that he's talking only about the elected opposition, or at least that part of the elected opposition with which he sits, I don't want to impute any of that to the honourable lady, then certainly I would commend to him a reading of my article in today's The New European. And indeed, I would commend to him the statements I made in this house and outside of this house in July 2016, which he sharply chastised me for, and I therefore immediately knew I was onto something good, where I made the distinction, if you recall, that I did not believe that there should be a second referendum, which was simply the running of the referendum question, but that I thought it was perfectly democratically legitimate, and indeed, perfectly not necessary, that whatever option was finally negotiated could be put to the British people in a referendum, and that that had democratic legitimacy, and indeed that is the position that we have taken consistently in our discussions with the United Kingdom, and it is also, Mr. Speaker, something that the Honourable Member has seen me say a lot recently. I said, revoke referendum remains, with revoke being necessary, the long extension is not agreed in order to allow for that referendum. So, Mr. Speaker, in a context where I think we now all agree, because again we also discussed for this some years ago, when I said that the referendum result had been obtained on the basis of a false prospectus, and I was told off for in that way annoying those who were most happy to lie, that was just a surprising of time, I also made the point, that I have now made, that the false prospectus had related to securities or financial services, the people who were told it would be in jail. I do note that the Electoral Commission has opened an investigation in that respect, which it has concluded they do not have sufficient power to deal with, and they've referred the matter to the Metropolitan Police, something which emerged yesterday. So it may yet be matters relating to how the engineering of the result came about, for which people have to account in keeping with UK electoral law. So, Mr. Speaker, having obtained the result as a result of telling the electorate a particular lie, well, I think it is very difficult now to prove there were, what the Honourable Gentleman is now calling a confirmation referendum, it's been called many things. I call it whatever the Honourable Gentleman would like, except a secret referendum. I think a new referendum is a better way of expressing that. Then the result would be very different. If it's one of the things that we were told, everyone was told, that whatever Article 50 says, in other words, whatever the treaty says, we will negotiate our exit from the European Union and our future deal at the same time. And when the first Brexit Secretary, David Davis, was to start the negotiations in June 2017, he said, well, Mr. Obama is saying that he won't engage with me in a discussion on the future relationship, so we shall have the row of the summer, but we will win it by the end of the summer. July had not started by the time that David Davis had folded on that. And that's to a very great extent why the United Kingdom is where it is today. With a political declaration in relation to the future, which is non-binding, and a withdrawal agreement, which is binding. And this could inform some of the criticism that honourable members sometimes make of the issue for the government. But anyway, coming back to the point I was making before I sat down to give way to the honourable gentleman, of course, it's unusual to come to the Parliament to ask for a vast power to amend primary legislation by simply legislation. These are circumstances which make that essential, and I think the Honourable Gentleman has understood that because of what's happening at Westminster. I'm going to adjourn the House later today, Mr. Speaker, until next Thursday, in case we have to do anything else before a cliff edge, because that accidental potential major break is still there. There isn't as yet no agreement, there will be a European Council meeting on the Wednesday the 10th. And that's going to mean, Mr. Speaker, that all eyes again are going to have to be on Westminster during the course of the next week. And one does wonder whether Westminster is now getting more views than Dallas used to get in the old days, because it is almost more exciting, unfortunately, as we say, and the clock bursts to chicken as we get to the end of every episode.
But, Mr. Speaker, with that, I think it is fair for me to say that I have found the work done by the Honourable Deputy Chief Minister in relation to this and all the other matters on which we have worked together in respect of our withdrawal in the European Union. Universally depressing and sad for both of us, as we are very much pro the continuation of the European project, despite the many warts that the European Union has, and despite the many slaps in the face of the European Union has given to the people of Gibraltar for choice this week, and which I sincerely believe they will regret in the future when they reflect on the way in which they conducted the negotiations with the United Kingdom. But I, of course, fully endorse the bill that we do in this House, and I've made it for them.
The Honourable Greg Clinton.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Before I like to echo the sentiments of my colleague, the Honourable Daniel Peterson, in that the official opposition will certainly be supporting the bill for the reasons he has outlined. I would just like to make 2 points, Mr. Speaker. First of all, I would like to ask the Deputy Chief Minister, given we have so much granular detail as to the content of these regulations, as to why he didn't see it fit to put it into the bill itself. Why the need for wide regulatory powers? Why didn't you just put in the amendments as you read out? And then we wouldn't have this situation where we are given the government wide powers, albeit we all understand why. Does the Deputy Chief Minister envisage something beyond what he's already read out? And to what extent, or to what extent will he start that discussion of possibilities, and how far do you think you might have to go, or is it just going to be limited to what he read out by regulation? And secondly, Mr. Speaker, in respect to the Chief Minister's contribution, in my view, it's regrettable, Mr. Speaker, that he's chosen to choose this bill to do a bit of perpetual electioneering. And Mr. Speaker, I would remind him that everybody in this House, everybody, on a cross-party basis, that's the Remain campaign. Everybody. I'm Mr. Speaker, for him to be making petty remarks on this bill at a point in time when not just this Parliament, but the Parliament in the UK is having a very hard time as to the question of Brexit and how we're going to manage this situation. I find that his opportunism in bringing up what can only be ill-timed electioneering is regrettable. And Mr. Speaker, we in this Parliament have in good faith of supporting this bill, and this is how we are repaid. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Dr. Joseph Garcia.
Mr. Peter, I can answer you on those questions. First, why is the regulation, the tax regulation, not in the bill? I think I explained that back in draft, and it's been discussed with the between the Parliamentary Council and the Cabinet Office of the United Kingdom. In fact, I'm told that the UK is holding up the publication of their notice of election until we pass the bill when it's going through the different stages in the South. I think it's been happening quickly, then, if I'm not mistaken. And we're going to have all the local upgrades by Monday. So that is the reason. Obviously, the regulation making powers are connected to the bill. It's not actually the European Parliament's election. It's not that we're talking about anything more major or more dramatic than that. And I explained in this to the field as well. One is recognizing the canvas for the Gibraltar general election as being the canvas for the register for the European elections. The other one was discussing the people opting out of an edited register, recognizing basically having this set up and in this time scale that cannot happen. And secondly, the date of the 31st of March 2019, as a date, we have to include the code as a reference to that amendment in the schedule. The date, and that date actually before today and before the register is published. So
The first time for that is it's still in draft and in discussion with UK. It will happen over the weekend. We expect to have everything ready by the Monday. And it will give us flexibility to pass the law and deal with it. Yeah, can I just add that the reference my understanding that the Minister was making was to the same individual who recently published online calling for emotional confidence in himself in the future, something that we consider is really inappropriate, totally inappropriate. So I commend them to that.
I now put the question, which is that a bill for an act to amend the European Elections Act 2004 be read a second time. Those in favour, those against, carried. The European Parliamentary Elections Amendment 2019.
I'd like to give notice of the committee stage and third reading of the bill to be taken today if all honourable members agree.
Do all honourable members agree that the committee stage and third reading of the bill be taken today?
A bill for an act to implement and preserve the agreement between the Government of the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland and the Swiss Federal Council. The Honourable the Minister for Infrastructure and Planning.
Did I have learned to move that a bill for an act to implement in the data of agreement between the Government of the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland and the Swiss Federal Council be read for the first time?
I now put the quote, which is that a bill for an act to implement in Gibraltar the agreement between the Government of the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland and the Swiss Federal Council on the International Flight of Passengers and Goods by Road and for connected purposes to the first time. Those in favour, those against, carried. The Swiss carried the Passengers and Goods by Road Act 2019.
Mr. Speaker, I have the honour to move that the bill be now read a second time. Mr. Speaker, this bill integrates the agreement between the Government of the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland and the Swiss Federal Council on the International Carriage of Passengers and Goods by Road. The agreement replicates the current regime in place for carriers under the agreement between the European Community and the Swiss Confederation on the carriage of goods and passengers by rail and road signed in Luxembourg on the 21st of June 1999, which is due to apply on opposite date. The bill, the implementation of the agreement ensures continuity in the road transport relationship between Gibraltar and Switzerland in the event that Gibraltar leaves the European Union. Replicating the current effects of the EU-Swiss agreement ensures the continued liberalized access for road transport carriers of goods and passengers with valid licenses to operate in each other's market. The suit of the bill does not provide for cooperative rights, but that provides for liberalized permits to international road hauling routes bilaterally, with transit and cross trade provided for Swiss and Gibraltar hauliers. It includes provisions on passenger and goods transport, taxation and customs formalities, application of national laws and regulations, infringement and special permits for oversized vehicles. The fines are set at level 3. £1,000 on the standard scale, thus equating to the fines under the Transport Act 1998 for equivalent offences. Mr. Speaker, I will now move on to the particular clause of the bill. Clause 5 of the bill allows for exemption from authorisation for Swiss carriers for the occasional transport of passengers in the data for certain journeys, provided the carriers ensure a road bill and a list of passengers are available upon inspection. Where this information is not available for the journey, or the journey is not exempted, the carriers are not exempt from requiring an authorization for the journey, and unless the carriers have an authorization,
they commit an offence and allow this to find at level 3. Clause 6 operates in the same manner as for the transfer of goods. In addition, the competent authority in Gibraltar may grant a special permit where the weight of indivisible goods exceeds the weight or dimension limit under the Transfer Act 1998. Such a permit may have a condition attached to it indicating a certain route be followed. Carriers who do not adhere to the special permit or do not adhere to the route indicated commit an offence and are liable for a fine at level 3. Mr. Speaker, Clause 7 prohibits cabotage. Clause 8 creates an offence of exceeding the guaranteed manufacturer's weight. Clause 9 creates a dispensation in relation to import duty, which would otherwise be due on importation of the vehicle and the fuel carried and used by the vehicle itself. It also provides an event of a breakdown of a vehicle for spares to be brought into the vehicle free of import duty to repair the vehicle. Import duty is repairable on any spares used to repair the vehicle. Clause 10 sets out that the bill would prevail over any other legislation relating to transfer of goods by persons by fifth carriers. Clause 11 and 12 set out the arrangements for monitoring of the agreements by the competent authority, that is the driver vehicle and licensing department in Gibraltar. Clause 13 allows for the bill to be amended or repealed in accordance with the agreement or for the proper functioning of the agreement. Mr. Speaker, lastly, after this stage, I shall be moving an amendment to the definition of competent authority as clause 3 of the bill to substitute the reference to section 11 with section 12 to correct a typographical error. I commend this bill to the House.
Before I put the question, if any honourable member wishes to speak on the general principles and merits of this bill. Yeah. I therefore put the question, which is what a bill for an act to implement in Gibraltar the agreement between the Government of the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland and the First Federal Council on the international carriage of passengers and goods by road and for connected purposes be read a second time. Those in favour and those against, carried. The first carriage of passengers and goods by road Act 2019.
Mr. Speaker, I beg to give notice of the committee stage in third reading of the bill to take in today before honourable members agree.
While honourable members agree that the committee stage in third reading of this bill be taken today.
Committee stage in third reading, honourable the Chief Minister.
Mr. Speaker, I have the honour to move that the House should resolve the present committee to consider the following bill before by clause. Namely, the European Parliamentary Elections Amendment Bill 2019 and the Fourth Carriage of Persons and Goods by Rail Bill 2019.
A vote for an act to amend the European Parliamentary Elections Act 2004. Clause 1 to 3. Stand part of the bill. The name title. Stand part of the bill. A vote for an act to implement in Gibraltar the agreement between the Government of the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland and the Fifth Federal Council on the International College of Passengers and Goods by Road and for Connected Services. Clause 1 to 2. Stand part of the bill. Clause 3 as amended. The Honourable Minister has given an indication of the typographical error. Section 11 should be substituted by Section 12 in the definition of competent authority. So clause 3 as amended. Stand part of the bill. Clause 4 to 13. Stand part of the bill. The name title. Stand part of the bill. Thank you.
the article reports that the Environmental Elections Amendment for 2019 and the fifth carriage of passengers and goods by road for 2019 have been considered in committee and agreed to without some amendment, and I now move that they be read a third time and passed.
A pretty close number two. Of the European Parliamentary Elections Amendment Act 2019, and the first carriage of passengers and goods by road Act 2019 be heard a third time and carried. Those in favour? Those against? Carried.
Mr. Speaker, I now have the right to move that the House should now adjourn. I did wait, that's adjourned. I'm going to go to
Mr. Speaker, I've just received news that my brother, Nigel Speaker, has been appointed as one of Her Majesty's Counsel for Gibraltar, and I'd like to, from here, offer him my sincere congratulations to say that our grandfather, Walter, would be truly, truly proud, as indeed will the rest of the family. I also extend my congratulations and say from everybody for Christian Walker, who has also the new director of public prosecutors, who's also been appointed.
But it's because blood runs thicker than water. I no doubt that the House will join in this message. Mr. Speaker, I now move that the House should adjourn to next Thursday, the 11th of April, and at 3 p.m. in the afternoon.
I will see you again to Thursday, next Thursday, the 11th of April, at 3 in the afternoon.